We're back with more of Project Milwaukee, What's on Our Plate on Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North. Over the course of this week, we've been telling the story of Wisconsin's food economy. In learning about the importance of food and food-related businesses to Wisconsin, we've covered almost every variable in the equation, from what's grown here, to what's processed, to the companies that supply the factories. For our last segment today, we're going to take a step back. There are several coffee companies that call the Milwaukee area home, places that roast their own beans and sell them in their own shops and at grocery stores around the region. You see their names and they register with you as Wisconsin companies, places like Alterra and Anodyne and Stone Creek. But of course, they don't grow the coffee in a climate like southeastern Wisconsin's, and few of us stop to think about the front end of the process, how the beans are grown, picked, and processed before they even get to the United States. Contributor Chris Hallberg of Wauwatosa was curious about that part of the process. And so while he was in El Salvador recently on a Fulbright fellowship, he tagged along with two Stone Creek coffee employees when they came down to Central America to visit a coffee farm. He prepared this audio essay.
I'm riding in a pickup truck with Jess Imig and Steve Hawthorne of Stone Creek Coffee, somewhere west of San Salvador. Our guide is Ernesto Lima, a sixth-generation coffee producer and owner of Las Nubes, one of the farms that supplies beans to Stone Creek. Steve's visited before, but for Jess and me, it'll be our first time on a coffee plantation. We ride with our faces pressed against the windows while Ernesto and Steve catch up, discussing the health of this year's harvest. Las Nubes translates to the clouds, an appropriate name for a farm perched on the side of a mountaintop. When we pile out of the pickup, Ernesto points out a few large towns below, and through the clouds we can make out the Pacific Ocean in the distance. The entire mountainside is covered in the green, shiny leaves of coffee trees. We're greeted by the farm manager, and together we head down the mountain along the same dirt path coffee harvesters pass through days before as they pick the ripe coffee. As we weave among leaves and thorny branches, I struggle to keep my balance with the few extra pounds of recording gear I'm carrying. I smile as I remember the photographs I've seen of workers carrying 100-pound bags of coffee cherries up and down terrain far worse than this. In fluent English, Ernesto begins to narrate the coffee story, and it's clear from the start that coffee is one of his life's passions. The coffee bean, though technically not a bean, grows inside a penny-sized fruit called a cherry. Typically, two beans grow inside each cherry, which starts out a candy apple green and turns to a crimson or deep burgundy when ready for harvest. New trees take years to bear fruit. They must be dutifully protected from physical damage, insects, and fungus as they grow. Ernesto spots something out of the ordinary and conferences with his manager.
No tiene plaga. For example, you see this tree. You can tell it's kind of sick. Yellow, this is some deficiency, maybe magnesium. You can tell the shape of the leaves. You see this one, you can tell the difference. Very clean, very shiny, dark, green. And that's the good thing when a plant is good, coffee tree, is that you have leaves from the ground up.
But the trees take care of the farmers who care for them. Many of the trees on this farm are nearly 100 years old and still producing fruit. All of Ernesto's coffee is certified organic, which makes the process of protecting crops even more sensitive. Miles away from the nearest town, I wonder how the certification organization enforces its policies. He explains that his cooperative receives a certification as a whole. The inspectors from the certifying organization can perform unannounced inspections on any farm at any time. If evidence of a violation is found at any farm, the entire cooperative loses its certified organic status. This method promotes self-policing among farmers and serves as a deterrent for cheating. When the coffee harvest is ready, droves of seasonal workers are hired to hand-select only the ripest cherries. In coffee-producing countries with high-altitude plains, coffee can be harvested by machine, but El Salvador is far too mountainous for mechanized picking. As we finish our farm tour, Ernesto offers to take us over to the cooperative's shared processing facility. Now in my mind, I had pictured a small stone mill next to a crystal river, but that couldn't have been further from the truth. This cooperative is one of the largest in El Salvador. Full-size, semi-truck-length shipping containers rumble in and out of the plant, while inside the immense storage warehouse, bags of beans are stacked from floor to ceiling. Men carrying 100-pound bags of coffee race through the narrow passageways of the coffee labyrinth, pausing to let us pass before continuing to load a container bound for Europe. First, we head to the processing tanks, where the beans are extracted from the cherries. Nearby, the silvery green beans are laid to dry on patios in the sun. Here they'll be hand-raked every 6 hours to ensure consistent drying and prevent mildew growth. They're then sorted by size, color, and shape through a battery of sophisticated machines that vibrate, blast air, and use teeny cameras to separate the beans for quality. As precise as these machines may be, they're no match for the human eye. Before being bagged for export, beans move along a slow-moving conveyor belt, where 24 women painstakingly remove any beans that don't meet strict quality standards. The final product is a top-grade green coffee bean, ready for export. Back at the hotel, Stone Creek's Jess Immig says even though she already teaches a class on the coffee-producing process, this trip has opened her eyes.
I think the most important thing, which I talked about yesterday, was just the work that goes into every step of that process. I got to see these small men carrying 150 pounds of coffee on their backs and carrying them on very thin pieces of wood, and was really, really impressive. And what I want to take back home from that experience is that we have to do our part. We owe so much to the part that we do in brewing our coffee as high quality as we can, and then sharing that information with our customers. And there's so much work that goes into it in El Salvador. We owe it to those people to put that work into it in the U.S.
Beyond learning about how coffee is produced, she says visits like the one today are an important part of providing socially responsible coffee. Companies have obligations not only to the community of coffee consumers in the U.S., but also to the Salvadorans who pick the beans and to the environment in which they're grown. But according to Steve Hawthorne, coffee shops aren't the only ones who bear this responsibility.
The producer has responsibilities to the people that work for them and to the quality of their product. We, as buyers of the product, have a responsibility to pay a fair price and to maintain this relationship and to educate our staff and to brew it with expertise and to make sure it's roasted, you know, to really provide the quality that the coffee deserves. But I think the consumer has a role in this too, to be educated, to understand where their coffee comes from.
When I came back home to Milwaukee, it wasn't long before I made it to my favorite coffee shop. Instead of slamming back my coffee and racing out the door, I paused for a moment and reflected on the production process, from cherry to cup, and all of the human labor involved in preparing the drink I was about to consume. I thought of the amount of care taken in bringing beans from some remote farm in Central America to here in America's heartland, and all the hands of all the people who touched it along the way. Now, it might just have been my imagination, but when I did finally take that first sip, I swear I could taste the difference. For Lake Effect, I'm Chris Hallberg.
Contributor Chris Hallberg lives in Wauwatosa. He recently returned from a 10-month Fulbright Fellowship in El Salvador, where he met up with two Stone Creek employees who were visiting a coffee farm. Coming up tomorrow on Lake Effect, we'll conclude our Project Milwaukee series, What's on Our Plate, with a forum broadcast live from the ground level of the Chase Tower, and you're invited. Stop by for a cup of coffee and a chance to watch Bob Bach host Morning Edition from 6 to 9 a.m., and stick around for Lake Effect from 10 to 11. All the details are available on the Project Milwaukee section of WUWM.com. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for tuning in today. We're back tomorrow morning at 10 for a live edition of Lake Effect on WUWM and WUWM HD1, Milwaukee Public Radio. Stay tuned. Fresh air is next.